Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Hudson Valley Jam here on Area 24 Radio, handmade, freeform, and worldwide. I'm your host, Jonah Coletti, coming to you every Thursday from the Gaga Arts Center here in Garnerville, New York, and I am joined by my co-hosts, Scott Staten and Stefan Wallman. We've got a guest for you.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going, Scott and Stefan?
Great. How's it going with you?
Not bad.
Here we are again.
We got a guest. Scott, you want to introduce a guest first?
So I'm going to let Stefan introduce Mark. You guys have known each other since you were kids, right?
Mark and I are old friends. We go back many years.
So you guys knew each other as kids. Stefan was telling me a little bit on the way here that you knew the Follies?
The Follies.
The Follies.
Yeah. I live in West Nyack. I lived in West Nyack. And the Follies, which was a family, local family, involved in the art community in Rockland community in Rockland County, moved up to the land. And that's how I got to meet everybody up there. Mark, your family moved up there, had to be
1956.
56, right. We moved to West Nyack in 54. And, oh, my God, that's a long time ago. So you lived up there through your whole life, really?
Right, up until I didn't take off until I was 30. I was pretty much there for three decades. And then I moved up to Orange County for a little bit. And then the family went out to Colorado. And I've been out there since 1992.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. Who has your house in...
We dropped him on that one.
All
right. Well, we're having a little mic trouble here this evening, folks. Sorry for that. Well, I think the best thing to do right now is maybe we're going to kick it into. Sorry to cut you off there, Mark, but we're going to get back to you. Let's go.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
The first track is something I did when. For about 10 years in the 70s, most of the stuff I was doing in the county was with bands. I was in a group called Four on the Floor with Matt and Johnny Hill, Jim Finnan, great bass player, and then sort of went off on a solo career for about 10 years in the mid-80s. This is one of the earlier tracks I did. It's a tune called I'll Be Good to You, and Al Orlo is playing guitar. He's a really killer guitar player, lives in Westchester. For many years, he was the musical director for Benny King, and who just recently passed away. And also features Andy Snitzer, who's someone I've been working with for a long time, really great sax player. Then Vinnie Conigliaro is playing drums, and Joe Salucci and Donna Grasso are singing some background vocals. I worked with all those guys in a band in Westchester for about 8 years. Hugh McDonald was the bass player at the time, so he's a Bon Jovi guy.
Bon Jovi, bass player, yeah, cool. Yeah.
So this is a tune called I'll Be Good to You. It's the album mix, so it's the extended track on that. It was a lot of fun. It's definitely 80. You'll hear the 80s influence there.
All right. Well, here it is. Got Mark Davenport in studio with us. Here is the first track we're going to be playing for you tonight, I'll Be Good to You.
Treated drop of love flowing through you.
we're back. That was You're the One. That was by Mark Davenport, who's in studio with us this evening. And we started off the set and the show with I'll Be Good to You, also from Mark Davenport. Mark, I really enjoyed those songs.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those vocals, man. Good nice. Vocals. We like those songs.
So who were the background singers on the second song we heard?
You're the one. That was Steve Light, who was a great keyboard player, vocalist.
Uh-huh.
And we had sort of a songwriting
collaboration
team going
okay.
for about 5 or 6 years in the
And that was
late
one of the
80s.
Tunes?
That was a tune I wrote, but he's actually playing organ on that, and I was all just right. singing lead vocals on that.
I see.
And then
great.
Tony yeah. DiPaolo is ripping it up with guitar. He's a guitar player on that.
And who played drums on that? You know?
Rocky Allenello. He's another Westchester guy.
All right.
And he was part of this band called Vox Humana that I had.
I remember that name.
It was the last band I had before I headed out to Colorado in 92.
What made you move from New York to Colorado?
Pretty much 20 years of playing six nights a week.
You had enough and you wanted to change?
Yeah.
Did you have family or friends?
I had a 6-year and a 3-year-old. And
sort
of felt like I needed to do something different. I was doing some teaching up at SUNY New Paltz, actually. It was sort of got me back into academia and teaching and thinking that would be something I could do.
So have you been a full-time professor since?
Yeah.
I read a little of your bio on CD Baby. Right. You had gone back to school after you...
Yeah. Well, there was the 9 years of graduate school thrown in there.
So. Okay. Yeah.
But
well,
it was a long road, you know, living in family housing and the kids, but it took some time.
But your kids turned out all right.
They sure did.
So it's all right.
They're out in Portland. My son Miles is in a killer, it's sort of a cross between a punk and a jazz band.
Uh-huh.
He calls it junk.
Okay.
It's a junk band.
Now, are you close to where David Snyder is in...
Well, David moved out there about 5 years ago.
Right, okay.
He actually coincidentally moved... Within walk, you know, maybe a 5-minute walk from my house.
Oh, really? And he's still there
in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
he actually since has moved, but he was there. We hooked up, and that's how on my most recent album he's all over it. Yeah.
Okay. So did you know Jeff Gray in
sure.
New York?
Uh huh.
So have you been and played at his studio? It looks amazing from the photos I've seen.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, he took a barn and converted it into this. World-class studio.
Yeah. It's like they could fit an orchestra in the studio, it looks like.
Yeah, and then he's got the drum set tuned to the room. The mics are tuned to the drums.
Wow.
That's where I did my drum tracks.
Okay.
Christian Teal played drums on the new album.
Uh-huh.
Brought in his cymbals and a snare. And boom, within, you know, usually 8 hours, you're banging on the snare,
it's all
banging
set
on the
up,
toms.
Bingo, right,
we came in. Within an hour, he's got the drum sound, and we're alive and kicking. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was great. Yeah,
let's talk about the next couple tracks you want to play.
Well, yeah, and Mark, you know your music, your recorder music is a whole different aspect of your what you do and what you teach too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing recorder from the time I was 3. My dad was a professional recorder player before people knew there really was such a thing as a professional recorder player, and played in an amazing early music ensemble called New York Pro Musica. It was throughout the 50s and 60s. So everybody in the family, all my brothers, we all played, or there are 4 of us, all started recorder when we were very little. He was the first president of the American Recorder Society in 1960, and so I was one of the 4 of us who took it as an instrument that I wanted to take on professionally, and did that for a minute. I still do that. I mean, mm-hmm. I played on and off, sort of. I go back and forth between playing recorder and early music and Renaissance music. That's the music I study. And then I, you know, became a songwriter when I was about 14 or 15, and go back and forth.
I should tell our audience, you grew up in the land up in Pomona, which has been an artistic community since, what, the 30s, 1930s?
No, it was 1954.
Okay.
And it was founded by a group of former faculty and students that all came from Black Mountain College.
Oh, in North Carolina.
And that goes back to the 30s and
right, 40s. Right, right, right. I was familiar with them. So when you were growing up, you had all those influences from all the kids of all the artists and, you know, the adults that were in that community. It's a great,
Right. It was a really unique childhood and growing. You know, uh-huh. having that kind of experience and the artists who were there, the potters and filmmakers and musicians, yeah. and so it was really exciting.
Yeah.
And no one owned the houses in that co-op, right? It was really a co-op, right?
Well, that's one of the unique things about it was that it was sort of anti-capitalist.
I see.
Of course, you needed someone with money to create an anti-capitalist situation. But it was owned cooperatively, meaning everybody owns that.
Wow. Is it still like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a unique venture.
Yeah.
So that people move in and move out, but it was specifically meant to avoid the kinds of money making appreciation and investment in land and property.
Yeah.
That
goes on everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And understanding that the first group of people who were there were very poor, upcoming artists, right? So
yeah.
they never could have lived in homes like that had they not had that opportunity to come in without laying out any capital.
Now, do you still have family living there?
My stepmom still lives there.
Okay.
And my dad lived there. We moved there when I was born, and he lived there until he died in 1999.
Wow. Well, listen, we've digressed. Tell us about what we're going to listen to next.
So the album opens up. There's three songs. The first is called Prologue, Old Box of Tapes. The second is One World, and then Open the People. The first, well, that's another story. But I had this fear in 1998 that all of those 300 recordings I had done were deteriorating. I don't know if you've ever heard of sticky tape syndrome. And I flipped out, and instead of going to a psychiatrist, I went to a recording studio and spent about $15,000 transferring all of my material onto digital.
Good.
You know, I blew out my Toyota van carrying up a giant oven that actually worked.
The convection oven,
And we got it going. Mm-hmm. And so I had all these tapes, and one of them, which I didn't know about, was my family members. In the 1960s,
wow.
my family members used to send tapes, reel-to-reel things.
They were like
tape mail.
Yeah.
And I realized that all these little snippets of conversations of my brother, of my father, and, you know, I didn't know what to do with that. Fast forward 10 years to this project now that I'm working on, and that ends up being the opening track where I'm taking little snippets all from the 60s. People, you know, they keep thinking, oh, it was nice to hear your kids on the tape. But it's not the kids. It's my brother. He was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. My father. Even me at the end, I pretend I'm Walter Cronkite instead of Cronkite.
Uh-huh. We did talk about this and play this, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we played some of these tracks. Yeah,
we talked about it. This is fantastic.
So and little snippets of even Matt Hill from a Four on the Floor gig. So it's mm-hmm. like a 20-year retrospective of these little snippets. And then I composed music in and around those tape loops. And also added choruses that you're going to hear later on in the album. Mm. So there's four choruses that come into the song.
Nice.
And then that goes into One World, which is a tune. Then it goes sort of chronologically, a 20-year span of songs I wrote. One World and Open the People. Vera Williams, who was one of the original members at The Land, was a great writer. She's now, you know, famous children's writer. But at the time, she had written some poetry, Open the People. And I wrote the music for that. And so I put them all together. It's really like a trilogy of those first three tracks.
All right, so let's listen to these.
Here it is on the Hudson Valley Jam. Don't go anywhere.
Would you like to sing a song?
No.
Come on. Are you
with I'll play piano. You can sing a song.
I'm talking through his microphone. He has an upstairs, a bed, a fan.
It's really wild to see it.
Electric piano, two electric pianos. And he has skis, he has
stones. We played in a very small room there. It's really very beautiful with candlelight all around. It's very nice.
Sunshine painted on his window.
this weekend. You're going to be at the Red Rail on Thursday. Come by, check it out.
Find somebody to talk to there, and now I miss not speaking to you here. So maybe you could.
Oh, dreamers and believers.
Oh, you know what's happened? Stefan has gotten hooked. Do you remember how Mark used to play with the phonograph and like put records on and watch them and all that?
I was dreaming about songs, Marco.
People, one life.
ourselves, so we may go on living with each other. But please don't forget what it all means. As the car gets lost behind the scenes, and the truth gets buried in the dream.
We're back. That was One World. I'm sorry, that was Open the People. Before that one was One World, medley there. And before that one, prologue to the album Full Circle, Songs on the Carousel of Time. We have Mark Davenport in studio with us. Mark, it's really cool you telling us the story of that song Prologue and when we had played it before. And I guess maybe you had mentioned it, Stefan, but I didn't remember, you know, what those voices were. I thought it was it's cool to know what that was about. That's really cool. You got those tapes from your two older brothers, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, really cool. Those, you know, and my dad and neighbor came over and ex-bandmates. And so, yeah.
Tell us about your studio at home. Yeah, I guess you have a studio at your house.
You have a, you know, it's amazing, right, isn't it? I mean, I have all this gear.
Yeah. You have Pro Tools? Pro Tools?
I have Pro Tools. I set it up in my basement, but honestly, I mean, I think I need my computer and the keyboard these days. You know, everything is on the computer, the sound modules.
So you have just like a MIDI keyboard and virtual synthesizers.
So what I do is I lay out the basic arrangement, and I actually do my vocals in my own studio.
Okay.
And then I bring it to Jeff's.
Okay. Yeah.
And luckily I've got great musicians who can, Christian Teal, the drummer, and that's where I brought in David Snyder.
I see.
And he just did an
incredible
job.
I do something still. I have a little Pro Tools rig at home, you know, all the synthesizers. I have real synthesizers, like some older ones and newer ones.
Right.
And I bring the hard drive to Larry Alexander's.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll redo everything at him and let him mix it. It's amazing.
Well, he's the master.
Yeah. He's fantastic.
He was Four in the Force first producer.
Okay.
We did those early tracks over at, 914?
Yeah.
When he was working with Bruce Springsteen.
Right,
and all
right.
Those, we sort of came in at the 11 o'clock hour.
At the tail end of that whole thing.
When everybody was, literally at 11 o'clock at night, you know.
Oh, I see.
Where we could just sort of sneak into the studio and record all night with the band and stuff. So.
Do you still have those recordings?
I do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I have all of them. I remember I...
Yeah.
I got them off the sticky tape, and he actually...
Did you toss all the tape after you transferred
No.
Yeah,
no.
I have my... I don't want to part with it.
Yeah, I don't know why I need it.
It's just useless,
taking up
space
and everything.
Do you know what we're talking about, the sticky tape?
You had told me about this before.
You got to bake these old tapes from the 70s.
Right.
You have to bake them in a convection oven.
Yeah.
Something like 160 degrees.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You've got to take the reel off the tape. So if it's in a metal...
I didn't know that.
If it's in a metal reel,
that'll
you've got to remove that. And sit it down on some cardboard, just just like it is.
Yeah.
And then you can stack them. You can stack a whole pile of tapes.
And
put those in a convection oven. It can't be a regular you're cooking.
Right.
I got mine out of an old recording studio.
The thing weighed
something like 800 pounds.
Oh man!
Oh, wow.
It took four people breaking our backs to load it into the back of my Toyota van, and then I drove it up to the top of the mountain in the Rockies, where this guy had this amazing studio, Akashic Studio.
And how many tapes did you have?
He did it all for you.
What's that?
He did it all the transfers.
He started to do it for me, and it got so tedious. I mean, I had something like 300 plus songs.
Wow.
So, you know, he was at the beginning, he was like a good engineer, and let me get the levels and all that. And like by the fifth day, it's you kind of have that, don't you? I'll be back in a little while. You know. And I'm sitting there, it was really just getting a balance.
Yeah.
And quickly getting it over to digital. And actually he at the time had 20 bit sampling rate, which was really nice.
Yeah.
That was a real trip, and being able to salvage all those tapes. So it's now on dozens and dozens of CDs.
It's a drag that people that want to do analog recording, you can't even get tape anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any companies that make tape.
What Jeff does is he actually records. When we did our tracks, I asked him to, and he suggested it, record the drums on a 24 track. Analog. So rather than recording them directly to digital, he recorded them on analog because you get more saturation
with
the sound. And then he transferred it to digital.
You know,
so that you're copying the analog sound rather than going direct to digital. I think, honestly, we'll get to some of those later tracks, but the drum sounds are just, I could just sit there and listen to the drums. They're amazing.
Yeah.
Mark, tell us where we can hear some of your tracks online. What's your website?
My website is openthepeople.com, which was named after that last song that a community member, as I said, Vera Williams, had written. All the information is up there. It's on iTunes and Amazon.com. And if you want the physical CD, those are up on CD Baby.
CD Baby, of course. And
I sent an email to CD Baby this morning asking them. I have three CDs up on CD Baby.
Uh-huh.
They changed the terms of their agreement a while back and put everything on streaming, and I didn't want that. Huh. I just wanted downloads.
Right.
Now every streaming service is up there, and I used to get maybe $30, $40 every quarter.
And now you get $14?
Not even. There was like $3.80. You know, someone takes they stream your song, it pays 0.006.
I was just talking about that with Stefan.
So it'll be interesting to see what their response is. I asked them to take it off all the streaming. And even with this new Apple thing they're going to do, Apple Music, they have everyone's library. They're just going to just take everyone's library and just uploaded as part of the terms of agreement. They just changed the terms of agreement.
Oh, do you hear what Taylor Swift did, though?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But even with that, they're going to pay 0.002 cents per stream. It's like, why bother even getting paid?
Yeah, $100 to make
3 months. You get to
throw up
for 3 months.
Throw up your
hands.
Yeah. Throw up your hands and surrender. I mean, look at it this way. Let's say we're making $40 a month, right? So that's $500 a year. I would just consider that a marketing plan, and let everybody have all of it for nothing.
You might as well do open mics. I make almost $7,000 a year off that.
It bothers me too.
That the system has reduced the value. Music has no value.
The flip side of that is that as artists, we're all free. We're all free to do whatever we want.
Yes.
And to get it out to the public. Right?
It's accessible that anyone could hear your music now. I mean, not that they couldn't hear it before. But maybe the people, I mean, I don't know. It's you can look at it both ways. I mean, just because I come from I've experienced both sides of it. I'm 30 in November.
Right.
I grew up waiting for my parents to take me to pick a disc on Route 59 when I was in grade school and middle school, and going to Tower Records, and every CD was $18, and I was okay with that. I didn't make money, you know. I just save my money, and I'd wait every month or so. I'd pick which CD I was gonna get, and
right
now
get one.
Now I buy every once in a while. I'll download a song on iTunes, but more often than not, there's ways you could you go on websites and it'll say stream this for free or download this person's new track. If it's a song that's on the radio, that's a popular song, people find a way to just get it out on a site, and you could just download it real quick. And it's not like I'd never do that.
Lots of pluses and minuses.
Yeah, I
thought about it a lot. I mean, it's easy to feel like you want to draw the line. You're creating something. You should be paid for something. Go back to the good old days, right? The good old days of the music industry in the 1970s. How many people were getting those major deals, right? And actually making money? Right. 99.999% of us weren't getting those major deals anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were making zero. And so now if we make $500 a year and we can do what we want, it's actually a better situation.
Well, if I was making $500 a year, I wouldn't feel so bad. But I'm this past like the two quarters, it's like $3.98.
Well, but you're talking about making money on recordings and downloads. We don't, forget about airplay,
right?
Unless you're Taylor Swift,
right?
But what it's forced artists to do to make money and to survive is to perform live,
right? It's always been like that, really.
And if that's the bottom line, that's maybe not such a bad thing.
Got to throw some new music on there, Scott. Your CD, you wanted to put your CD
on it.
The whole
thing really pisses me off.
It pisses me off.
I'm such a pawn in this system of like the one percenters taking fucking everything.
It's not worth your time being pissed off.
Yeah.
It's not worth your time.
You're right. It's not worth it.
Well, you could write a song about it.
Let it go. What do you got next on that list there?
So two more tracks off this first album, then a couple tracks off the new album. But I wanted to play these two tracks. One was Sea of Hope, which was a tune I wrote in the mid-'80s. But, again, I was coming back and reimagining how these songs could be arranged and produced in a more contemporary way. And this features Andy Snitzer again. Andy played on that very first track back in the 80s. So when I did go back into the studio and had this concept for this album, I wanted to make sure that I gave at least one track over to Andy to just do his thing. You sort of have to wait till the end of the track where it gets into a real good groove there. But he just blows
out
on it.
Did he email his part to you?
He did.
That's amazing, right?
Andy, at the time, he was on tour with Paul Simon. And I knew he was doing that tour, but I also asked him sort of as a favor, old time's sake, could you play on this track? And he said, sure, send me the, he's a super great guy. I sent him the tracks, and he has, I mean, he produced his own stuff. He's an amazing producer, and as well as an incredible mm-hmm. player. So he was all over the thing. I mean, I think he probably spent about 2 or 3 hours and sent me multiple tracks and ideas, more than I could wow. ever. So wow. many ideas and things that I actually used. I used some of that for another track. So I sort of scammed him on that one. I got for the price of one, I got two songs. But he did a great job, and I just popped it back into Pro Tools,
uh-huh,
and it was all synced up. And
it's amazing. Right?
And he gave me the freedom to, he had done. I mean, it was really hard because everything he did was great.
Yeah.
So how do you pick which one you want when they're all good? But that's the job of the producer. That's when you have to step out.
Do you know Alan Wentz?
No.
Alan Wentz played bass on "Play That Funky Music, White sure. Boy." Yeah. He's a friend. He's been on the show a couple times. He produced this track, Legoland Empire.
Guard the Point.
Everybody album, was, yeah. One guy was in England, one guy's up in Newburgh, the other guy lives down south. It was all done, everybody collaborating. That's how all the music was done. It's amazing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I know. It's a trip.
Yeah, right.
All we need to do is add the Skype monitor.
Yeah.
I actually did that with, on this album, I did that with the Viola da Gamba, not this album, the next one. Where the woman was playing in the studio, and she lives in Indiana. So rather, than flying her out, I Skyped into the studio session,
wow.
and he turned the computer around so that I was looking into the studio.
And you could see her
and
playing.
And we had the monitor on the control room, and I just was watching her play, and I stopped that, and I could talk back to the
wow.
to the performer, and yeah, I like that take. Let's try this back again. It was as if I was just sitting in
right.
the studio. We were having a comedy. We were cracking jokes like this. You know? So it's you can make it somewhat human.
Yeah.
In all of this technology. Yeah. It's so it starts off with Sea of Hope, and then maybe we could segue that into the other track on this album. It's called One Hope, which was a tune I did with Vox Humana. We performed that a lot live. It was one of our favorite tunes. And that's a little bit more of a sort of a political statement. But that was the ballad of the single on the album.
Okay, so here is Sea of Hope from Mark Davenport. Check it out.
Don't know where I'm bound. I need some faith, need to be found. But I won't stay down, 'cause the Sea of Hope can still be found. Curtain you wanna look behind. does it matter? What do I care? Too many crying eyes in there. They're so far from here. Little children hungry. There's fighting in the streets. Bloody hands are plenty. Anger and deceit. No more lies. Can't hide it from these eyes. Open up your heart. If you see, if you feel, one hand reaching out, one voice is crying loud, one tear rolling down, one hope standing proud. Don't be fooled by power. That's where the weak ones hide. Paranoid and desperate, believing their own lies. It has left us blinded to what is real. It's hard in the emotions, cold as steel. No more lies. Can't hide it from these eyes. Open up your heart. You can see, you can feel. One hand reaching out. Take a stand. With some love and compassion, and with an open hand. Yes, we can make a difference for all of those who need. So just open up your heart and you can feel how they bleed. No more lies. Hide it from these eyes. Open up your heart. You can see, you can feel. One hand reaching out, one voice crying loud, one tear rolling down, one hope standing proud. Reaching out.
when nothing matters and everything's changed. I see my future poured down the drain. In separation, stitch by stitch, you get replacement, itch by itch. All the lucky ones never have to worry. Stay protected by the sun. It takes me there, oh, every time. Thursday afternoon, with a cup of tea.
That was Thursday Afternoon. That was by Rich Steele off his latest record, The Last Resort. And before that one, we have Mark Davenport in studio with us this evening. So we had a song called One Hope, and we started off the set with another cut from that record, which was called Sea of Hope, featuring Andy Snitzer. Right, Mark?
That's it.
And he's a saxophone player, right?
Killer.
Yeah, nice. Good stuff.
Rich, so, Rich Steele.
Before we talk about Rich, tell us about the Stevie Wonder concert.
That was just unbelievable.
He performed the entire songs in the Key of Life.
Yeah, so I hear that Stevie Wonder's kicking off his Songs in the Key of Life tour, where he's playing the entire album, which is a double. It's not right. just a double album. But if you had the album, it had that little inserted small album that had two songs on each side. So it was a double album plus four.
Right, right.
And he played the entire thing from top to bottom.
Wow.
So
it's one of the greatest records ever made.
It is.
Bar none.
Yeah. And I just happened to be teaching a class on Stevie Wonder. And I see that, first of all, I wanted to go to the concert. But then I see that he's kicking the tour off in Denver, which is where I teach at Regis University. And so I knew right away that somehow or other I had to get my class on a field trip to go to see Stevie Wonder. And so, of course, you know, I ask who's interested. Everybody's ready. Oh, yeah, Stevie Wonder. You know, plus we're studying him.
Right.
But, you know, they're college students too. So to pay $125 for a ticket is kind of rough. But I was able to contact, I thought for a moment there I might be able to
get a freebie.
Yeah, well, contact somebody in the Stevie Wonder crew, but that didn't, you know, no matter how much weight, I don't have a lot of weight. So. But I did manage to get to the Pepsi Center and had some rep there. That's where they performed in Denver. And he worked out a deal. I think it was $40 a ticket for the whole, you know,
everybody.
Crew of 25.
Wow.
We carted them down in vans. And I remember... I remember as we were getting ready to go down there, it was an 8 o'clock concert. A couple of the students were saying, how long do you think this concert will be? You think it's going to go very late? And I said, well, you know, Stevie Wonder's pretty old now. He's like in his 60s. He's like 65. They're starting at 8. They'll probably wrap it up like by 10. You know, we'll get the vans back. You guys will be back in your dorm rooms probably by 10:30. You know, it's like a 10-minute drive to the Pepsi Center. Everyone's all excited. We're in the vans. We go down there. We get really early. We get good seats, and people are excited. Audi comes. So at 10 o'clock comes around, he hasn't even gotten through like half the concert. Wow. Because he's stopping in between.
Talking.
And he's talking, and he's jamming out with these different people. And it's just an amazing, amazing concert. So he's going on. He's going. 11 o'clock comes around. He's still got plenty of songs to go. And, oh, by the way, I'm bringing out a couple guest artists.
Wow.
Please welcome Herbie Hancock and Chick Corea.
Wow.
Who just, by chance, were playing up the road on their duo tour. Right.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they had a national duo tour.
Wow.
And so who comes up to jam for an hour with Stevie Wonder but Herbie Hancock and Chick Corea, man.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And it's just, so now it's like midnight. But the rest of them are just, oh, my God, I can't believe all these old people jamming,
still going.
Jamming out like this. And
still rocking.
And, I think they closed it. The show closed around 12:30. And, you know, they got back. Instead of getting back, you know, at 10 and doing a little bit more homework, they got back at 1 in the morning and were pretty much fried. You know, I think. You know.
Yeah. Wow, I bet that was great. I would have loved to have seen that. Yeah.
Rich Steele's new record, you were about to say?
Yeah, Last Resort. I think there's 16 tracks. And, of course, I had to rush out of my house. I didn't take my notes. It's a reflection on life, death, love, hate, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
It's a lot to cover.
Mm. Mm-hmm. 16 tracks. So we'll play it a little more next week.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You worked with Rich?
Rich, sure. Hey, Rich, are you out there? Love you, babe.
He's in Vegas.
Rich listens to our show.
Vegas.
Rich listens to our show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Rich and I had a trio, actually, with John Babcock.
Okay. All right.
Who was also a bass player in Four on the Floor back in the 70s. And the three of us, actually, we did quite a lot of gigs in the county for about a year and a half. It was just
Did you ever play at the Interlude?
Of course.
Yeah. That was a big place.
I think we were at the Four Star Steakhouse. Remember that place?
In New City. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was my big 3-0, 30th birthday.
Wow.
And I remember parting with Rich and JB.
Uh-huh.
They were buying me shots.
I remember those days.
And the next thing I know, I'm getting home. It's like 4:35 in the morning. My wife is sitting up in bed. And I said, "What are you doing up?" She said, "Oh, I just couldn't sleep." By the way, she's 9 months pregnant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I 5:00 in the morning, I roll into bed. I look at the clock. It's 5 in the morning. 15 minutes later, I get a tap on the shoulder. "Honey, we have to go to the hospital."
Oh, man.
My water broke.
No sleep and all those shots
in
you.
I'm looking. It's 5:15. I'm going, "Oh, how can I do this?" I like slapping my face.
Yeah.
Trying to get myself together. So my son was actually born on my 30th birthday.
Wow.
Wow.
So, but that was the night before was with Rich and John doing our gig at Four Star Steakhouse shots of tequila.
So when you went into the hospital, you were just oozing alcohol.
I'll tell you, you know, you can straighten out
really quickly. Yeah.
You have to. You really can. Yeah.
All right. So what are we going to listen to next?
So then a couple tracks from the new album, Joyful Sighs and Soulful Hymns. It sort of fuses everything that I've done over the last 30 years. It takes Renaissance music as its foundation, the melodies, not only the melodies, but the counter melodies. So the difference between Renaissance music and popular music is a melody with chords underneath it. And maybe you sing harmonies in the chorus. That's it. It's very straightforward. Mm. There's a verse and there's a chorus, maybe a bridge. In Renaissance music, you know, like a motet, it'll start at the beginning and it goes to the end. And it's all new material from beginning to end, so through composed. But in addition to that, it has multiple melodies happening at the same time. 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6. So it's very complicated. It's one of the reasons it's, for some people, it's difficult to listen to because, you know.
It's so complex.
How do you hear something where I'm hearing one part down here and one part up there? Sometimes they're in different languages. And sometimes they're different words.
Hmm.
You know, so it's a lot more challenging to listen to and get into. But I use that as a basis with the sort of goal of I'm going to take this music and turn it into something.
Now, these pieces, were they real pieces that were written in the Renaissance that you kind of redid, or did you actually compose some?
So it's a combination of stuff.
Okay.
One of the things I do in early music is I go back to 16th century manuscripts. These are 400-year-old manuscripts in old notation.
Mm.
And I transcribe those and convert them into modern notation. I edit them so that people can read them.
What is the notation like on the original?
There's no bar lines. There's no time signatures. There are time signatures, but it's not like 3/4 because there's no bar lines, so you can't have something in a measure.
Huh.
You know, so you have circles, which are triple time. You have C's, which are duple meter.
Huh.
Long note values. There's no eighth notes and 16th notes. No ties, no scores, right? So you take six-part music, all you have is part books, six parts, and then you've got to put them together into a score and make sure they all come out right.
Wow.
It's a whole process in itself.
Yeah.
But so I actually took, you know, multiple parts, and I would take maybe one of the melodies of the five or six parts and use that as a melodic idea, which I then condensed into a keyboard transcription on piano. And then from there I scored it using those same melodies but with different instruments. So in some cases it's with the band, guitars and bass and slide guitar and stuff. Some cases I'm actually using early instruments because I play recorder. There are recorders on there. There's viola da gambas on there. Wendy Gillespie, amazing gambist, is playing viola da gambas, which are like cellos, or, you know, they're six strings fretted like a guitar.
Wow.
And tuned like a guitar.
Really?
But you bow them like a cello, you know, between your legs. It's viola da gamba is the leg in Italian. Huh. So it's the viol between the leg. So I'm using Renaissance instruments, but creating my own keyboard part. And I usually just do that for some of the verses. So I'll use that as a basis. And then newly composed will be the hook, you know, because they didn't have hooks then. So I'll just take, you know, maybe a minute of the verse, and then I'll create a chorus. Hmm. And maybe come back to that idea.
Hmm.
So this first track I was going to play, I'm going to maybe play a couple in a row here. Do you want to do two or four? Or what are you thinking?
We could do... These are all from...
The new album, Joyful Sighs. Yeah.
Okay. Sure, yeah. We could do four then.
Okay, so Little Star is the first track. And for that, I not only took the music from Nicolas Gombert, who was a Flemish composer from the Renaissance, but I use the words from Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, but it's actually not that version. It's the original version.
We like this. We have used this. Played this before.
Yeah, Jane Taylor actually wrote a poem called The Star, which was then converted into a children's song. So I went back to the original and used some of those words from that poem. And then my original idea was to have like a children's choir. I looked into the Colorado Children's Choir, but that was just too big and lush. And I happened to run into an ex-student of mine who said she had these really wonderful students in her second grade class who she thought could do the job. You know, a boy and a girl, brother and sister, and then another boy, Jeremy. And so I went down and met them and realized that they would be perfect, but they couldn't just come in and sing it. So I drove back down to Aurora probably for a couple of months working with them. They had the tracks, and we sang it over and over and over, and we got it. And then
they recorded it there?
No, they came up to my studio with their parents.
Yeah.
But they only took about an hour.
Yeah.
And I got them doing all the, you know, because it's not, they're sometimes singing harmony, but they're sometimes singing separate parts. You know, it's difficult stuff. It's something that professional choirs would have to be trained to do.
Yeah.
But they just killed it. Killed it. And it just adds a whole element. So there's that in Little Star. And then that segues into You Are a Rose, which was one of the singles on the album. And that's based on a 16th century motet by William Byrd, who was one of the... I mean, he's up there with Shakespeare, the same time as Shakespeare.
Uh-huh.
And then Robert Herrick, the song is based on a poem by Robert Herrick. The original poem was a meditation for his mistress. It's all about flowers and roses were metaphors for love and sex and relationships. And so You Are a Rose, the whole beginning part of that is the Robert Herrick poem. And then I gloss on it. I make up new stuff. And then the third track is Joyful Sighs, which is I wanted to give at least one instrumental example, which sounds very much like the original Renaissance piece, except for there's a piano in the background. So when you hear that opening up, the recorders and the gambas, that sounds kind of like a Renaissance piece. Then the accordion comes in, and that's the chorus. And that preludes into Second Chance, which is sort of the central piece of the album, which is then the sort of the pop version of the Renaissance piece. So Joyful Sighs is the instrumental version of Second Chance, but I put those back to back. It's actually not like that on the album. Okay. They're separated, but here it may be, you know, it's sort of complicated as you can see to hear, but those four songs go together pretty nicely and give a real flavor of the Renaissance influence on that. And yet at the same time,
it's contemporary.
Yeah, it's contemporary. And then, you know, with the pedal steel, Dan Jones, you know, I'd never been much, I'm not a big country fan. But I'm being converted maybe a little bit because I wanted to use pedal steel on this, and I was just so blown away by his playing and the mood that it sets in some of the tracks that you'll hear on it.
That's a difficult instrument to play.
Yeah. So,
All right,
let's check it out, guys. This is Little Star from Mark Davenport on the Hudson Valley Jam.
Up above the world so high. In this land of plenty, with pastures of green laid under gold pavement, and everyone thirsty, but nothing is sacred. Souls that are dying, dying souls. A voice in the street. Words resound, crying out. No one is listening.
No one.
Truth is concealed.
Truth concealed.
Lives that are lonely. In the dark, can't seem to find our way. In the deep blue sky, a star, but no one is watching. Eyes that can't see, with hearts that are bleeding.
Children,
gaze above, what will we leave them?
such sweet sand, but oh, with so short a stay, that where you grew, scarce one can say, so beautiful, a July flower. Yet one rude wind tears to shuffling summer showers will force you to hide and cower. You are a rose in facet vine. Your tendrils can love entwine, love entwine. The poet's tongue so well can speak, though to compare words and clever rhymes are meek, and there a place, the balm I seek, your petals soft and neat and again, for pressed to close, you will stand. And easily dance, and then to see, I'll breathe a faith. Oh, happy rose, and enter with other flowers. Find a love, yeah, love. You are a queen of flowers among, but die you must. Maker of this song, the maker of this song. You are a rose, a sweet summer flower. Thank you.
lovingly. She carried him with joyful sighs and soulful hymns, gentle songs for kicking limbs. But he would never sing too soon, taken up on soft angels' wings. But she was given a second chance to embrace the circumstance and to conceive another child. If you were the one to fill his place, would you remember him with grace? Would you wear his smile on your face? A parent's fear, a somber din, crying voices, speed engine, struck the car your son was in. No one could have survived, but kind blessings rained down upon their lives. And he was given a second chance to embrace the circumstance and to forgive the reckless one. You are the father in such strife. How would you thank God for his life? How would you hold him by your side? Well, I am the father of that lucky boy, and I'm the younger brother of that stillborn child. And I've been given a second chance, yeah, a second chance. Oh Lord, oh Lord, oh loving and kind, filled with goodness, the sweetest woman you'll ever find. But fortune can sometimes be blind, and even with a mess, grief may rest upon us with due. But she was given a second chance to embrace the circumstance and to laugh again and dance. If she were your lover and your wife, how would you thank God for her life? How would you share the rest of I am the father of that lucky boy, and I'm the younger brother of that stillborn child. Yeah, I'm the husband of my darling one, and I've been given a second chance. Yes, yeah, second chance. Oh Lord, oh my Lord, I've been given a second chance. Yeah, second chance. Thank you.
That was Mark Davenport with Second Chance. Before that one, Joyful Sighs. Before that one, You Are a Rose. And we started off the set with Little Star. All of these songs are from his latest record, Joyful Sighs and Soulful Hymns. Mark, some good stuff. We've played some of those cuts before, but now we get to hear a little bit of background about them. So it's cool, you know, in person.
So openthepeople.org.
Dot com.
I'm sorry.
Openthepeople.com.
And that's where there's many more. You were saying 300 songs?
Well, no. I was
not all up there, of course.
That's the sticky tape transfer story. This is the two full albums, and then some singles are up there.
Mark Davenport.
So do you perform?
Where
you are?
I have done some performing. I did a couple gigs with that first album, but I'm on sabbatical right now. Until January.
Okay.
And I have a big history project that I'm working on, but I'm hoping at some point, maybe in the summer. I know what I'd need to do with this. It requires, as you can hear from those arrangements, I need everything that you're hearing were natural instruments. Yeah. Drums, electric bass, recorders, gombas, pedal steel guitar, voices. So I'd want to do it all, a four-piece, vocal section. Like a 12, 13-piece band. So if I can figure out the logistics of it, I'd love to do it.
Yeah. What's the history project you're working on?
It's the history of the Gatehill Co-op, the land that we were talking about before. Yeah. So I'm writing the first 20 years of that.
Wow.
You'd be great when you get a little further with that you come and, or talk, even over the phone, do it with us.
And talk
about it. That's history of Rockland County.
Right.
I'm sure many people would be interested.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you here just for a visit, Mark, or are you here?
I'm here working on the – I'm actually interviewing. I've been interviewing all week. And
are you doing video interviews?
No, I'm just doing audio. I find that those are more intimate than some of the video interviews that people are less self-conscious.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know all these people. I mean, I grew up there. It's more of a conversation, but I'm getting some great, great stories.
Well, I'll bet. Yeah,
and this is for the history project,
right?
Oh, cool!
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah. So that's what I'm out here for mainly. But was glad I could hook up with you guys. It's been really, really. Yeah,
thanks
great.
So much for coming by.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a great night. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, it was great to hear my friend Rich. Rich, keep at it, man. That sounds awesome. I'm glad to hear that he's still working on the voice box. That was like a highlight of the night when he'd rip that out and do some tunes with that with the band. So I heard it, and I don't know if he's doing it on. I'll have to check out the album now, and I've heard that track. So
we'll play some more of it next week. We'll play some. So do you want to you have one more piece you want to go out with?
Do you want to play us out with something?
We could go out with Maybe I Love You More. That was a tune. This was the last track on that CD. It's actually a song that I wrote with my wife Marilyn. We wrote it in like 1990, after we had already been together for quite a while, and we're still together. We just celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary. Wow.
Congratulations!
So this is a tune we wrote, and it's the one tune on the track that's not based on Renaissance music, but we threw it on.
Before we play that, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you, guys.
I really enjoyed it.
It was so fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mark Davenport, everybody. And for Scott Staten and Stephen Wallman, I'm Joe Nicoletti. This is the Hudson Valley Jam. But we got one more for you before we go. One for Mark Davenport. This one's called I Love You More. So everyone have a great weekend. We'll see you soon.
It changes, that's all. Love grows in and out of and it hibernates. It gives and intakes. It gives and intakes. Well, maybe love is meant to be like a growing child. Freedom. sweet smile. And if our eyes don't always melt each other's hearts, it's not so bad when we're apart. And if our kisses aren't as frequent as before, it doesn't mean love you more. Yeah, I love you more. And soon it all comes easy. We are standing side by side. Loving you is like breathing, taking on new meaning, taking on new meaning. And if our eyes don't always melt each other's hearts, it's not so bad when we're apart. Frequent as before, it doesn't mean I love you less. It doesn't mean I love you less. In fact, I love you more. Yeah, I love you more. Gave me when I fell shut out. Love deep inside, my love is true.